so we aren't sure yet what happened.
Waxillium sat on the floor beside the long sheet of paper covered with his genealogical results. Marcy sat on the floor with her knees to the side.
The words of founding included a reference to two more metals and their alloys. But the ancients believed in 16 metals, and the law of 16 holds so strongly in nature that it can't be disregarded. Either Harmony changed the way that allomancy itself works, or we never really understood it.
I would not have expected that from you, Lord Waxillium. Lawman, I had anticipated. Metallurgist, perhaps. But philosopher?
Well, there is a link between being a lawman and a philosopher. Lawkeeping and philosophy are both about questions. I was drawn to law by a need to find the answers nobody else could, to capture the men everyone considered uncatchable. Philosophy is similar. Questions, secrets, puzzles. The human mind and the nature of the universe, the two great riddles of time. What was it for you? One does not often meet a young woman of means studying law.
My means are not so meaningful as they may seem at first. I would be nothing without my uncle's patronage.
Still.
Stories. Stories of the good and the evil. Most people you meet, they aren't quite either one.
I disagree. Most people seem basically good.
Well, perhaps by one definition. But it seems that either one, good or evil, has to be pursued for it to be significant. People today, it seems they are good or sometimes evil, mostly by inertia, not by choice. They act as their surroundings prepare them to act. It's like, well, think of a world where everything is lit with the same modest light. All places, outside or inside, lit by a uniform light that cannot be changed. If, in this world of common light, someone suddenly produced a light that was significantly brighter, it would be remarkable. By the same token, if someone managed to create a room that was dim, it would be remarkable. In a way, it doesn't matter how strong the initial illumination was. The story works regardless.
The fact that most people are decent does not make their decency any less valuable to society.
Yes, yes. And I'm not saying that I wish everyone were less decent, but those bright lights and those dim places fascinate me, Lord Waxillium, particularly when they're dramatically out of order. Why is it that in one instance, a man raised in a basically good family, surrounded by basically good friends, with good employment and satisfactory means, starts strangling women with copper wires and sinking their bodies in the canals? And conversely, consider that most men who go to the roughs adapt to the general climate of lax sensibilities there. But some others, a few remarkable individuals, determined to bring civilization with them. 100 men convinced by society that everybody does it this way will go along with the most crude and despicable acts. But one man says no.
It's really not as heroic as all that.
I'm certain it doesn't look that way to you.
Have you ever heard the story of the first man I brought in?
Yes. Yes, let's just say that I have heard it. Perret the Black, a rapist and an allomancer. Pewterarm, I believe. You walked into the lawkeeper station, looked at the board, ripped his picture off, and took it with you. Came back 3 days later with him over the saddle of your horse. Of all the men on the board, you picked the most difficult, most dangerous criminal of the bunch.
He was worth the most money. I looked at that board, and I thought to myself, well, any of these blokes is right likely to kill me. So I might as well pick the one worth the most. I needed the money. I hadn't had anything to eat in 3 days but jerky and a few beans. And then there was Tarako.
One of the great bandits of our era.
With him, I figured I could get some new boots. He'd robbed a cobbler just a few days earlier, and I thought if I brought the man in, I might manage to get a new pair of boots out of it.
I thought you'd picked him because he'd shot a lawkeeper over in Faradana the week before.
I didn't hear that until after I brought him in.
Oh? And Harris Elhard?
A bet. With Wayne. You don't look disappointed.
That just makes it more real, Lord Waxillium. I need to write these down.
She fished in her handbag, pulling out a pad and pencil.
So that's what motivated you? You study out of a desire to be a hero, like in the stories?
No. I just wanted to learn about them.
Are you sure? You could become a lawman, go out to the roughs, live these same stories. don't think that you can't just because you're a woman. High society might lead you to believe that, but it doesn't matter out beyond the mountains. Out there, you don't have to wear lacy dresses or smell like flowers. You could belt on some revolvers and make your own rules. Don't forget, the Ascendant Warrior herself was a woman.
Can I admit something to you, Lord Waxillium?
Only if it's salacious, personal, or embarrassing.
I like the lacy dresses and smelling like flowers. I like living in the city where I can demand modern conveniences. Do you realize I can send for terrace food at any hour of the night and have it delivered?
Incredible.
As much as I like reading about the Ruffs, and though I may like to visit, I don't think I'd take well to living there. I don't mix well with dirt and grime and an overall lack of personal hygiene. And, to be perfectly honest, I have no problem at all letting men like you be the ones to belt on revolvers and shoot people. Does that make me a terrible traitor to my sex?
I don't think so. You are pretty good at shooting things, though.
Well, shooting things is okay. But people? I know the Ascendant Warrior is a model for self-actualized women. We have classes on it at the university for preservation's sake, and her legacy is written into law. But I don't really want to put on trousers and be her. I feel like a coward for admitting it sometimes.
It's all right. You have to be yourself. But none of that explains why you are studying law.
Oh, I do want to change the city, though I feel that tracking down every criminal and punching holes in them with pieces of metal moving at high speeds is a terribly inefficient way to do it.
Sure can be fun, though.
Let me show you something.
She dug in her handbag a little more and came out with some folded-up sheets of paper.
I spoke of how people generally act in response to their surroundings. Remember our discussion about the Ruffs and how there are often more lawkeepers per person there than here? And yet, crime is more prevalent. That's the result of environment. Look here.
She handed over some of the pages.
This is a report. I'm putting it together myself. It's about the nature of crime as related to environment. See here? This discusses the major factors that have decreased crime in some sections of the city. Hiring more constables, hanging more criminals, that sort of thing. They are of medium efficacy.
What's this at the bottom?
Renovation. This case is where a wealthy man, Lord Joshin himself, purchased several parcels of land in one of the less reputable areas. He began renovating and cleaning up. Crime went way down. The people didn't change, just their environment. Now that area is a safe and respectable section of the city. We call it the broken windows theory. If a man sees a broken window in a building, he's more likely to rob or commit other crimes since he figures nobody cares. But if all the windows are maintained, all the streets clean, all the buildings washed, then crime goes down. Just as a hot day can make a person irritable, it appears that a rundown area can make an ordinary man into a criminal.
Curious.
Of course, that isn't the only answer. There will always be people who don't respond to their surroundings. They fascinate me, as I've mentioned. Anyway, I've always been good with numbers and figures. I see patterns like this and wonder. Cleaning up a few streets can be cheaper than employing more constables, but can actually decrease crime to a greater degree.
Waxillium looked over the reports, then back at Marcy. She had a flush of excitement in her cheeks. There was something captivating about her. How long had they been here? He hesitated, then pulled out his pocket watch.
We shouldn't be chatting like this. Not with poor Steris in their hands.
We can't do more until Wayne returns. In fact, he should have been back by now.
He is.
Oh, my!
How long have you been out there?
Wayne's head poked around the corner, wearing a constable's hat.
Oh, a little while. Seems like you two are having some kind of smart people moment. Didn't want to interfere.
Wise of you. Your stupidity can be infectious.
Don't use your fancy words around me, son.
Wayne strolled in. Though he wore the constable's hat, he was otherwise normally dressed in his duster and trousers, dueling canes at his hips.
Did you succeed?
Waxillium stood, then reached down to help Marcy to her feet.
Sure did. I got some scones, and the Dirty Connors even paid for them.
Wayne?
Yes?
We're Dirty Connors.
Not no more. We are independent citizens with a mind towards civic duty, and eating the scones of Dirty Connors.
They don't sound that appetizing when described that way.
Oh, they were good.
Wayne reached into the pocket of his duster.
Here, I brought you some. Got a little mushed up in my pocket, though.
No, really.
Wayne brought out a paper that he waved at Waxillium.
Location of the Vanisher's hideout in the city, along with the name of their recruiter.
Really?
Marcy rushed over to take the paper.
How did you do this?
Whiskey and magic.
In other words?
Waxillium walked up and read the paper over Marcy's shoulder.
Wayne did a lot of fast talking. Nice work.
We need to get going. Go there, get Steris, and...
They won't be there anymore.
Waxillium took the paper.
Not after having several of their members captured. Wayne, did you manage to get this without the constables hearing?
Well, what do you think?
We should probably go soon. Get to the scene before it gets too cold.
But the constables...
We'll drop them an anonymous tip once I've seen the place.
Won't be needed. I set a fuse.
For when?
Nightfall.
Nice.
You can show your appreciation with a big fat nugget of a rare and expensive metal.
On the desk.
Waxillium folded the paper and slid it into his vest pocket. Wayne walked over, glancing at the apparatus set up on the desk.
I'm not sure if I want to touch any of this, mate. I'm rather fond of all my fingers.
It's not going to explode, Wayne.
You said that...
It happened once.
Do you know how bloody annoying it is to regrow fingers, Wax?
If it's on par with your complaining, then it's likely appalling indeed.
I'm just saying.
Wayne scanned the desk until he found the bottle of Bendalloy flakes. He snatched that, then backed away warily.
The most innocent looking of things have a tendency to explode around you. A bloke has to be cautious. This isn't much.
Don't act spoiled. That's far more than I could have gotten you on short notice if we'd been out in the roughs. Drop the hat. Let's go look at this foundry your notes mention.
We can use my carriage if you like.
To the side, Tiom walked in, carrying a basket in one hand and a tray with tea in the other. He set the basket beside the door, then set the tray on the table and began pouring tea.
You want to come, Marcy? I thought you said you wanted to leave the shooting to men like me.
You said they won't be there, so there's really no danger.
They still want you. They tried to grab you at the dinner. It'll be dangerous for you.
And they'd likely shoot either one of you without blinking. So how will it be any less dangerous for you?
I suppose it ain't.
Tiom walked over, bringing a cup of tea for Waxillium on a small tray. Wayne plucked it off with a grin, though Tiom tried to pull the tray away.
Oh, how convenient. Wax, why didn't you ever get me one of these chaps back in Weathering?
The butler shot him a scowl, then hurried back to the table to prepare another cup. Waxillium considered Marcy. There was something he was missing, something important, something about what Wayne had said.
Why did they take you, Marcy? There were better targets at that party. Women closer to the bloodlines they wanted.
You said she might have been a decoy to throw us off.
Wayne dumped some Bendalloy into his teacup, then downed the entire thing in one draft.
Ah.
Yes.
Waxillium looked into her eyes and saw a flash of something there. She turned away.
But if that were the case, they'd have wanted to take someone that wasn't close to the same bloodline at all, not one who was a near cousin. Ah. You're illegitimate, then. Steris' half-sister by Lord Harms, I assume.
Yes.
Wonderful show, Wax. Usually I wait to call someone a bastard until the second date. Third, if she's pretty.
Of course. I didn't mean...
It's quite all right.
It made sense. Marcy and Lord Harms had grown so uncomfortable when Steris had spoken of mistresses. And then there was the specific clause about them in the contract. Steris was accustomed to infidelity on the part of a lord. That also explained why Harms was paying for the education and housing of Steris's cousin.
Lady Marcy.
Waxillium took her hand.
Perhaps my years in the roughs affected me more than I'd assumed. There was a time when I gave thought to my words before speaking them. Forgive me.
I am what I am, Lord Waxillium, and I have grown comfortable with it.
It was still crude of me.
You needn't apologize.
Huh, tea's poisoned.
Marcy immediately went to Wayne's side. Waxillium spun, looking at Tiom just as the butler turned from his supposed tea preparations and leveled a pistol at Waxillium. There was no time for thought. Waxillium burned steel. He kept it in him when he thought he might be in danger and pushed on the third button of his vest. It burst from his vest, streaking across the room and striking Tiom in the chest. Neither the bullet nor the gun registered as metal to Waxillium's alimentic senses. Aluminum, then. Tiom stumbled to the side and dropped the gun, pulling himself along the bookshelf in an attempt to flee. He left a line of blood on the floor before collapsing at the door. Waxillium dropped to his knees beside Wayne.
Wayne?
Poison. I hate poison. Worse than losing a finger, I tell you.
Lord Waxillium!
Wayne will be fine. So long as he can talk and has some ferrochemical reserves, he can pull through just about anything.
I'm not talking about him. The butler!
Waxillium looked up with a start, realizing that the dying Tiome was fiddling with the basket he'd brought in. The man reached a bloodied hand into it and pulled on something.
Wayne! Bubble! Now!
Ah, hell.
Wayne rolled over to look at the explosion in progress.
I warned you. I said things are always blowing up around you.
I refuse to take responsibility for this one.
He's your butler.
Wayne crawled to his knees.
It wasn't even good tea.
It's getting bigger.
The fire blast had vaporized the basket before Wayne got his bubble up. The blast wave was slowly expanding outward, burning away the carpet, destroying the doorframe and the bookshelves. The butler himself had already been engulfed.
Damn, that's a big one.
Probably meant to look like an accident with my metallurgy equipment. Burning our bodies, covering the murder.
Shall we go out the windows, then?
That blast is going to be hard to outrun.
You could do it. Just gotta push hard enough.
Against what, Wayne? I don't see any good anchors in that direction. Besides, if I launch us backward that fast, going out the window is going to shred us and rip our bodies apart.
Gentlemen, it's getting bigger.
Wayne can't stop time, just slow it greatly. And he can't move the bubble once he's made it.
Look, just blow the wall out. Push against the nails and the window frames and blast open the side of the building. Then you can shoot us out that direction without us running into anything.
Do you even listen to yourself when you say these things? That's brick and stone. If I push too hard, I'll just throw myself backward into the explosion.
It's getting really, really close.
So make yourself heavier.
Heavy enough so that I don't move when an entire wall, a well-built, extremely heavy one, is ripped off a building?
Sure.
The floor would never be able to take it. It would shatter and...
Both of them looked down. Snapping into motion, Waxillium grabbed Marisi, pulling her over. He rolled onto his back, holding her tightly atop him. The explosion was taking up most of their field of vision now, having consumed a large portion of the room. It swelled closer and closer, glowing with angry yellow light like a bubbling, bursting pastry expanding in an enormous oven.
What are we...
Hold on!
Waxillium drew into himself weight he'd stored in his metal mines across days spent going around at three-quarters weight. He became heavy as a boulder, then as heavy as a building, then heavier. All his weight was focused on one small section of the floor. Waxillium dropped out of Wayne's bubble of speed and hit real time, the shift jostling him. The next few moments were a blur. He released his metal mind and pushed against the nails in the floor below them, trying to slow himself and Marisi. He didn't have enough time to do it well. They crashed into the floor of the next story down, and something heavy landed on them. Waxillium lay dazed. Marisi was clinging to him, shaking. He held her close for a moment, blinking. Were they still in danger? What had fallen on them?
Wayne.
He forced himself to move, rolling over and setting Marisi aside. The floor beneath them had been crushed practically to splinters, the nails flattened to little discs. Part of his downward push must have been while he still had the increased weight. They were covered with chips of wood and plaster dust. The ceiling was a wreck, sections of wood smoldering, bits of ash and debris wafting down. There was nothing left of the hole he'd broken. The blast had consumed it and the floor around it. He moved Wayne. His friend had fallen on them and blocked the brunt of the explosion from above. His duster had been shredded, his back exposed, blackened and burned, blood dribbling down his sides. Marisi raised a hand to her mouth. She was still trembling, her dark brown hair tangled, eyes wide.
No. Please, no.
Anxious, he felt at Wayne's neck. There was a faint pulse. Waxillium watched the wounds on Wayne's back begin to close. It was a slow process. A blood maker using ferrochemical healing was limited by how fast he wanted the power to work. Recovering quickly required a much greater expenditure of health. If Wayne didn't have much left, he'd need to work at a slow pace. Waxillium left him to it. Wayne would be suffering great pain, but there was nothing he could do. Instead, he took Marisi's arm.
It's all right. Wayne is healing. Are you injured?
Two in three sufferers of great trauma are unable to correctly identify their own injuries as a result of stress or the body's own natural coping mechanisms covering the pain.
Tell me if any of this hurts.
Waxillium felt at her ankles, then legs, then arms for breaks. He carefully prodded her sides for broken ribs, though it was difficult through the thick cloth of her dress. She slowly came out of her daze, then looked at him and pulled him close, tucking her head against his chest. He hesitated, then wrapped his arms around her and held her as she got a hold of her emotions. Behind them, Wayne stirred, then lay still, letting the healing continue. They'd fallen into a spare bedroom. The building was burning, but not too badly. Likely the constables would soon be called.
Nobody has come running. The other staff, are they all right?
Or were they part of it? His mind was still trying to catch up. Thiom, a man who, as far as he knew, had served his uncle faithfully for decades, had tried to kill him 3 times. Marcy pulled back.
I think I've composed myself, thank you.
He nodded to her, pulling out his handkerchief and handing it over, then knelt by Wayne. The man's back was crusted with blood and burned skin, but it had been lifted and raised as scabs, new skin forming underneath.
Is it bad?
You'll pull through.
I meant the duster.
Oh, well, you're gonna need a really big patch this time.
Wayne pushed himself up and moved into a sitting position. Trails of tears were running down the side of his face.
I told you. Innocent things are always exploding around you, Wax.
You kept your fingers this time.
Great. I can still strangle you.
Thanks.
I apologize for having to fall on you two.
I'll forgive you, under the circumstances.
Waxillium glanced at Marcy. She sat with her arms wrapped around herself, hunched forward, face pale. She saw his scrutiny, then lowered her arms, as if forcing herself to be strong, and began to stand up.
It's all right. You can take more time.
I'll be well. I'm unaccustomed to people trying to kill me.
You don't ever get accustomed to it. Trust me.
Wayne pulled off the remnants of his duster and shirt. Then he turned his burned back to Waxillium.
You mind?
You may want to turn away, Marcy.
She frowned, but didn't look away. So he grabbed the burned layer at Wayne's shoulder and, with a jerk, ripped the skin off his back. New skin had formed underneath, pink and fresh, but it couldn't finish healing properly until the old, stiff, burned layer had been removed. Waxillium tossed it aside.
Oh, Lord of Harmony, I think I might be sick.
I warned you.
I thought you were referring to his burns. I didn't realize you were going to tear off his entire back.
It feels much better now.
Wayne rolled his arms at his shoulders, now shirtless. He was lean and muscled, and he wore a pair of gold metal-mined bracers on his upper arms. His trousers had been singed, but were mostly intact. He reached down, pulling one of his dueling canes out of the wreckage. The other was still at his waist.
Now they owe me a hat and a duster. Where's the rest of the house staff?
I've been wondering that myself. I'll do a quick search and see if anyone's hurt. You get Marcy out the back, sneak through the grounds and out the garden gate. I'll meet you there.
Sneak?
Whoever hired that bloke to kill us will be expecting that explosion to mean we've gone to meet Iron Eyes.
Right. We'll have an hour or two while the house is searched and Thiom is identified, if there's enough left to identify. During that time, we'll be thought dead.
It'll give us a little time to think. Come on, we should move quick.
He led Marcy down the back stairs toward the grounds. She still seemed dazed. Waxillium's ears felt like they were stuffed with cotton. Wayne was right. You never got used to people trying to kill you. Waxillium began a quick search of the house and started refilling his metal mines as he did. He became much lighter, about half his normal weight. Any more than that, and it became difficult to walk normally, even with clothing and guns weighing him down. He was practiced at it, though. During his search, he found Limmy and Miss Grimes unconscious but alive in the pantry. A glance out the window showed the coachman, Krent, standing with his hands on his head and looking at the burning building with eyes wide. Of the other house staff, the maids, the errand boys, the cook, there was no sign. They might have been close enough to the blast to be caught in it, but Waxillium didn't think that likely. Probably Thiom, who had charge over household staff, had sent away everyone that he reasonably could, then had drugged the others and stuffed them someplace safe. It indicated a desire to ensure that nobody was hurt. Well, nobody but Waxillium and his guests. In 2 quick trips, Waxillium carried the unconscious women out into the back garden, being careful not to be seen. Hopefully, they would soon be discovered by Krent or the constables. After that, Waxillium fetched a pair of revolvers from the closet on the main floor and got a shirt and jacket from the laundry for Wayne. He wished he could look for his old trunk with his Starions, but there wasn't time. He slipped out the back door and crossed the garden on 2 light feet. Each step of the way, he was increasingly bothered by what had happened. It was horrible for someone to try to kill you. It was worse when the attack came from someone you knew. It seemed implausible that the bandits would have been able to contact and bribe Tiom so quickly. How could they have ever known that an aging butler would be amenable? The groom or gardener would have been a far safer choice. Something more was going on here. From Waxillium's first day in the city, Tiom had been trying to discourage him from getting involved in local lawkeeping. On the night before the ball, he pointedly tried to get Waxillium to drop the subject of robberies. Whoever was behind this, the butler had been working with them for some time, and that meant they'd been watching Waxillium all along.